Thanks for joining us today for another episode of Lid Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Asaro, and for this episode, we have a very special guest with us. His name is Eric Kosvik Ustaka, and he is author of Till Dots in an Orange World. Welcome, Eric. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm pretty good. It's the first month of 2020, and I'm looking forward to talking with you and to give some good advice to all your listeners out there.
Fantastic. So before we begin, I'm just going to give people a brief introduction into who you are, your career, and also, most importantly, the topic of this book. So Eric is partner and founder of Blok and Ustaka, a Danish leadership advisory company that provides inspiration, guidance, and implementation support to top and middle management. He is also a mentor, keynote speaker, and trusted advisor. Over the past few years, Eric has focused on codifying the mechanisms for the future of work to establish a leadership framework for modern organizations. Eric's latest book is Till Dots in an Orange World. This draws on the workings of Frederic Laloux and his 2014 title Reinventing Organizations, addressing the issues of creating an organizational platform and ecosystem that allows modern progressive dots to emerge, along with the type of leadership required for this ecosystem. So the first question I want to go into is that the book refers to the works done by Frederic Laloux in 2014, where he describes the five organizational stages in colors: amber, red, orange, green, and till. And I know many of our listeners will now think, oh, till dots in an orange world. Now I get where the colors are coming from. Mm-hmm. So I suppose I just want to ask you, and for reference to our listeners and readers, what do these colors mean? And what is the reason behind this title? Why was it crucial that you had this title for your book and that you wanted to create a discussion on these colors and the symbol that they provide?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take the reasoning first. I read the book that he wrote back in. I think I read it in 2015, a year after he wrote it, and it described a language of culture, and some mechanisms that I saw more and more often. I saw that people really liked the teal, but they lived in an orange world. And more and more, I recognized the pattern of small teal teams that lived inside an orange engine. And that's the reasoning for the title of my book. If we take all these five colors, there's red, there's amber, there's orange, there's green, and teal. Red is the the guiding metaphor for red is the wolf pack or the mafia. It's described by power. It's described by influence. Some call it management by gunpoint. I can see why it's extremely efficient, and I can see why it's extremely horrible at the same time. The next level is amber. Some described it as what goes on in the army. I do not really like that because from the officers and the soldiers that I talked to from the military, they actually describe a much more modern and progressive approach to leadership that what is described here. But it's characterized by formal roles, lots of hierarchy and top-down management and command and control, and that the future is a repetition of the past. So what has gone on is exactly what we are trying to do tomorrow and in a month and in a year. Orange is actually what is characterized by many of the classic corporate structures, pharmaceutical companies, banking, insurance, all the classic structures. It's based on management by objectives, focused on profit and growth. We are in the business to provide good products and to beat competition. Green is a focus on family. It's a focus on empowerment and stakeholders and idealism. And the last one is teal. This is the most progressive one, and it's actually an example of organizational democracy, which is a trend that we see many times right now, self-management, no hierarchy, living organism, wholeness, evolutionary purpose. And it's based on freedom at work and a very sustainable approach to what leadership is and what humanism is.
I like the idea that each of these stages reflect different forms of organizational behavior, work, and conduct. And you mentioned an interesting point that a lot of people like the teal stage. It's become a trend, but many of us live in the orange. Why is that? In terms of leadership and traditional forms of leadership and new forms of leadership, what is the difference between these practices? And why is it that we like one, but we're living in the other? Why haven't we made that jump? Why haven't we moved? Why are we still teal dots in an orange world, to reference the title of the book?
Yeah, it's partly because of a habit. It's partly because of stakeholder shareholder model. It's partly because of the existing business model that we are placed in. And it is also partly based on the way that we are used to work with stakeholders, reporting, delegation, transaction work. But there is some trends that really pushes us towards a new way of working. And those trends are actually split into two parts. One is about technology and digitalization, which provides new ways of producing stuff, new ways of communicating. We are talking about artificial intelligence and internet, and we're talking about like Skype and Messenger and Twitter, all that that makes it possible for us to collaborate in a new way. The other trend is a focus on humanism, focus on democratic workplaces, and I started to spot a couple of things in the workplaces that people tend to flock together in tiny teams. Extraordinary things get done in small teams, like 5 people or 7 people if you're good to if you master how to talk about feelings and good collaboration based on true dialogue. So that is the foundation for spotting these teal dots, that everybody have really tried working in them in some kind of project that is really well founded with a good culture and good reflection. And they are very often part of a regime of command and conquer. So it's that mix of progressive small teams or progressive business units in a rigid structure that I think that is definitely going to be what is part of the 2020s going forward. It's that mix of teal and orange at the same time.
You mentioned this notion of progress and how we have many resources and technologies which can anchor and encourage this process to take place. However, how can we start transformations and how can we start transforming organizations that are still heavily anchored with old practices and with managers that are reluctant to change? Because we may have the resources and the equipment, but the people and the mindsets within these organizations may be slightly less reluctant to move to this new stage. And that can actually hinder the process. And we see that we have many businesses which are either further ahead into this change or further behind because of this reluctancy which some may express. So how can transformations take place with this reluctancy present?
Yeah, I have seen that happen in two ways. One way is, and that actually comes from the very top, that the board of directors or the C-level, the CEO, the top management layer, they have this kind of epiphany. To say, okay, we want to work in a different way. And that is normally because they can see they need to be relevant to the market or relevant to the employees. So their reasoning is, if we want to stay in the business in the next 10, 15, 12 years, we need to work in a different way that is adaptable to a changed business world where changes are rapid, changes are pivotal, and they are massive. They are everywhere. So one way is that it starts from the top. I must say that rarely happens, but when it does, it's massive, and it takes place over 2-3 years. The other way is that someone, typically a middle manager, has this epiphany to say, I really want to do this differently. I can see that Agile and Scrum and Holacracy and Teal is something that could really work in our department. And that might be 5 employees. That might be a team of 5 or a team of teams of 5 teams, where that manager, he or she, says, we want to do this differently. So they kind of carve out their business unit, and they say to the rest of their peer leaders, we are going to do something differently over the next, 3 or 6 months. We're going to experiment with less management or less hierarchy, less rules, fewer rules. We're going to do this based on different mechanisms where we focus on collaboration in a new way. And they start forming a Teal DOT based on those 5 employees or 5 teams that is based on more focus on purpose and meaning and relations and network and new generations. That they have different aspects to coaching and feedback. So that's the two ways, either top down or some kind of rebel within the organization who say, we want to do this differently.
They're the dots that are in a world trying to make the difference. But part of this process and this model of organizational thinking, Teal Dots in an Orange World, you argue that there needs to be a balance between alignment and autonomy. And this is something you cover in the book. And for many of our readers, it's something they want to know more of. So could you just tell us a bit more about that and what you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. This autonomy, alignment, balance, I think that's one of the crucial aspects for understanding how to create new ways of working or better ways of working or freedom at work or a future of work that is based on a true understanding of what collaboration is and how it works. If you, in your head, draw a 2x2 matrix, on one axis we have autonomy. Everybody wants a certain amount of autonomy, even in the business. And everybody on the other axis wants some kind of alignment, so we run and we work towards the same goal in the same fashion. And it's that balance of having both the freedom to mastermind work, to use resources, to have access to knowledge, the freedom to choose what kind of tool I want to work with and apply, and at the same time have the certainty to have the guideline of alignment. So when I choose a tool, that could be some kind of programming language, I choose Java, and I have the autonomy to choose Java, but I at the same time am sure that we have alignment in the way that we work. And maybe when I choose Java over C Sharp, I know why I'm doing that. So it's that balance of having both the freedom and making sure and understanding and have the safety of knowing that we are working in an alignment towards a shared goal and understanding of it.
In a much larger organization, this balance, some could argue, is much harder to apply, because while we can align on what goal we want, especially in organizations with hierarchy, whether it be middle managers or CEOs or leaders, shall we say, how do you manage the company's, the people's alignment while not restricting their autonomy? How do you control that balance? How do you ensure that everyone is running, as you said, running towards that same goal without, as a manager or a CEO, feeling that you're making them run to that goal but slightly pressuring on their autonomy? How do you manage that balance when you have a team that you're responsible for?
Yeah, you actually, you're you're posing two questions there. One is about daily work and how do you do that? The second is about scalability. And I would like to talk about the scalability issue first, because that is really what tricked me into writing this. I have met so many middle managers who have had the epiphany of working in a teal dot. They have said, okay, I remember back in the days, 10 years ago, I was in that organization, in that department, in that team, and it was really, it was fun, it was energizing, we high-fived, we had a lot of debate, a lot of good dialogue with our customers, we have empowerment, we had the autonomy. So we want to do that on a business scale. We want to take the idea of a teal dot and scale that up to our 5,000 or 10,000 employee company. That is just not doable. If you read some of the books, some of the theory behind this, people say that it is doable. I just can't see it. And that's the controversy in what I'm writing is, if you want to scale these teal dots, you need to do something different. You need to install Orange between or under the teal dots. So the scalability issue of understanding how to do this, how to make everybody aligned, comes through a clever approach to a new way of understanding what goes on between the teal dots. I have seen these teal dots scale up until 100, maybe 120, 150 employees, but not more than that. Between those teams or team of teams, you will have some clever way of creating Orange in a new way that exactly handles what you ask, the alignment. They in a way that focuses on white space, that's the area between the teams, and distributed leadership, that's where the balance between alignment and autonomy happens. The second question you ask, how do you do that on a daily basis? Well, first of all, you talk about it. You talk about expectations. What does it actually mean to be autonomous? What kind of decisions can I make myself? For example, can I choose my own tasks? Oh, yeah, you might do that. Can I choose how I handle the task? Yeah, you might do that. Okay, can I choose when I work? You might do that. Can I choose how much salary I have? Well, maybe. I know organizations who actually have the opportunity to choose their own salary. That requires a lot of debate about mutual understanding of each other. But it all starts with a proper, clever dialogue and genuine dialogue about what expectations do we have to every aspect of work, from direction and strategy, innovation, culture, how we organize and what kind of leadership we have between us.
So it's a more interactive approach, a more healthier approach. If you have people, if you're constantly talking with people about the alignment and you're encouraging them to do things whilst, you know, ensuring that we are trying to equally in our own ways get to that same goal. I do like the idea of it creating a more healthier workforce, you being able to almost discuss and negotiate the dynamics whilst having that clear end goal. But relating to the concept of autonomy, there's a very interesting leadership approach you cover in the book, self-managed delivery teams. How does this work? And do you think that this can be more productive than the traditional perspective of managing teams? Do you think that teams self-managing themselves is better for business, better for organizations and their workplaces?
It is absolutely better. But there's pretty many nuances to understanding what actually self-managed teams are. And one of the things that I point towards is that this is not one size fits all. And there's levels of maturity to what does it actually mean to be self-managed. So the first understanding is that somebody needs to create and nurture and be the guardian of these teams. Self-managed means that you have the right amount of autonomy to choose what you need to get your work done. And you need to deliver something. You need to either have a service or some kind of product or process that you are responsible for. And you need to be a team, not just a group of people that just happens to work in the same place, but they happen to work together towards a shared goal with a shared culture. Somebody needs to take care of that. And to do that, we introduce advisory boards who has the responsibility to make sure that these teams have their own understanding of how well they actually do that. What's their maturity level? Are they capable of handling their own tasks? Are they forming? Are they storming? Are they norming? Are they performing? And it's the responsibility of the advisory board to ensure that the right amount of support is given to the self-managed delivery teams. You also ask if this is good for business. And there's actually two answers to that. We can see that it's when we do this on large scale, we have less sick days. People tend to work better together, to have a better dialogue, because they actually engage in not only in the product and the process, but in each other. So they have better dialogues with each other and with customers, meaning that they are better at looking at mistakes or errors. They are better equipped to talk about them, so they just don't hide them. And that means that, well, we might have the same amount of mistakes or errors or flaws, but we are better at handling them in due time. And that is a good business case in itself. The third thing is that this approach creates a learning organization. They are better at embracing changes because they are better at collaborating. They're better at understanding the humanistic side of it. It is, from my learning, we have the same kind of productivity, but we are more efficient. We are better at talking with each other. We're better at dialogue, and we're better at handling mistakes in due time.
You mentioned all these examples, and I see them as examples of the future of the workplace, the future of organizations, and how we'll now introduce advisory boards, self-managed teams. But what else, and for our listeners listening who work in these companies and these corporations, what else does the future of the organization have in store? What else can we expect with this rise and this almost revitalization of how we work and how businesses work? What else is in the future?
Yeah, I do believe that we're going to see some new organizational structures where we have less hierarchy, we have fewer levels, fewer silos. We're going to see less explicit top management. We're going to see less repetitive work and simple tasks. Some of that is given to the to software, robots, and automation. We're going to see less secrecy. And instead, we're going to see a lot of focus on people and culture, a lot of focus on how we actually delegate, how we handle mandate. We're going to see experiments where we, in a clever way, sometimes we go to the lab to find new ways of working or find new to discover new problems that we solve in new ways. We're going to focus on what is complex and what's creative, and a lot of transparency when it comes to access to data, access to people, access to knowledge. So it's, and we're going to see some organizations that drift towards organizational democracy, more focusing on the humanistic part of it, but at the same time understanding how we create alignment. So it's not a full transformation towards huge freedom, extreme transparency. It's a balance. So in some of those who write about it, they go to the extreme, and but I have another way through it, or another approach to it, which is a mix of old school and new school. It's a mix of orange and teal. What we're going to see is a flip from like the classic hierarchy or the matrix organization towards self-managed delivery teams. The team is going to be the ultimate, it's going to be the crux of the organization. And then around the team, that is what we're going to focus on. We're going to focus on what kind of organization are we going to have? What kind of culture will support the teams? What kind of individual coaching and stewardship are we going to give each employee? What are the roles of the advisory board for the teams? What kind of network do we have? What kind of rhythm do we set up to ensure synchronization and alignment and distribution of funds? What kind of white space exists between the teams? And lastly, who can decide what? What kind of decision power do we allow the teams to have or to take? So it's a very different world that's focused on a lot of technology and a lot of humanism.
It's a different world, but it's an exciting world. It's a prosperous world.
I absolutely think so, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Eric. This conversation has been amazing. Thank you for introducing us to your book and this very timely concept. We're in a new decade. It's 2020. So these are new things which new people should start to consider, utilize, and adopting. For anyone who is interested in knowing more about you, knowing more about your work, or anyone who wants to follow these ideas and these discussions you have, where can they find you? Where can they follow you?
Well, the easiest way is actually to Google my name. I'm the only one in the world that's called Eric Korsvik Ostergaard. Apart from that, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter and Instagram with the handle at Eric Kustergaard, where the Danish letter Ø is replaced with a Q. And on my website, of course, blogostergaard.com. That's where we post a lot of articles and other toolings that might be interesting for you.
Fantastic. And also to our listeners, while you do Google his name, please feel free to also type in Till Dots in an Orange World next to that, so you can also find platforms to purchase copies of this very, very exciting book. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eric. And thank you to everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye out on our social media. That's at Lid Publishing, LID Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for more information about new books, expert opinions, and of course, exciting, interesting, and engaging conversations with many of our thought leaders and Lid authors such as Eric himself. Don't forget to check us again on Lid Radio Podcast. I've been your host, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye.